Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 166 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling a sunny long-range weather forecast for Pacific Northwest wheat farmers until August. About my recording of a presentation by long-range weather meteorologist Art Douglas, a perennial crowd pleaser who served as the keynote speaker at the opening of the Pacific Northwest Farm Forum on February 4th, 2020. A couple of asides before I get to Douglas's forecast. First, at the same event that Douglas spoke, Marcy Green, past president of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, received the Excellence in Agriculture Award given by the Agribusiness Council of Greater Spokane. Green led WAG during negotiations during the 2018 Farm Bill and has been very involved in outreach to urban audiences with a farming message. Second aside, Rob Sharkey, a podcaster out of Illinois with a listenership that dwarfs little old Wheat All About It, also spoke as part of Farm Forum. Sharkey has a podcast called Shark Farmer, which I highly recommend. As a farmer himself, Sharkey speaks the language of agriculture, which you can hear in his understanding of the issues and the ethos. I've listened to his podcasts, and even though they're taking place far from the Northwest, it's fascinating to find the commonalities that exist no matter where farming is being done. And there's good advice, too. Give it a listen. Subscribe to Shark Farmer on any podcast app. I've been listening to Art Douglas speak about the weather since I was in my 30s, and I'm in my 60s now. Over that time, there have been moments when he seems to have endorsed the concept of man-made climate change, but he has mostly stuck to planetary and cosmic explanations for the change in temperatures. For the record, it has recently been reported that the past decade was the warmest on record, and that 2019 was the second warmest year on record, surpassed only by 2016. As he always does, Douglas spent a lot of time taking his listeners around the world to look at weather in various countries months in advance. He bases his forecasts primarily on what is happening to the world's ocean temperatures. In the case of the Pacific Northwest, the Pacific Ocean in particular. Douglas claims a La Niña is in the offing, which among other things means a cooling of Western Pacific Ocean temperatures. Currently, world weather monitors are calling conditions neutral. That is, neither warm enough to be called an El Niño, nor cool enough to be called a La Niña. But Douglas puts ocean conditions squarely in the La Niña column, and that, he said, is good for the Northwest. You have to attend Douglas's presentation in person to get the full meal. This podcast focuses on what I think wheat farmers and others involved in the industry are mostly interested in, and that is the Pacific Northwest forecast for this spring and summer. His answers are generally positive, except for those who are still harvesting in August and September. I posted numerous PowerPoint slides on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page from Douglas's presentation, both those relating to the forecast you hear here and others I feel are self-explanatory. Check them out, and while you're there, please follow the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page.
Okay, now let's go to the forecast, the fun part. When I make a forecast, I look at the sea surface temperature anomalies in the North Pacific, and I look at the 700 millibar height anomaly. 700 millibars is approximately 10,000 feet up in the atmosphere. If you looked at clouds, it would be altocumulus clouds, mid-level clouds. It's kind of in the middle of the moisture in the atmosphere, and that's why we use that 700 millibar level. In January, we had a very strong ridge in the North Pacific, a deep trough in the eastern Gulf of Alaska, and a warm ridge in the eastern United States. Eastern U.S. has had a pretty good winter this year. In terms of sea surface temperatures, the entire month of January, we kept the warmth all the way from the western part of the Pacific on the equator. This is the dying remnants of El Nino, And that warmth extends through Hawaii all the way up into the Gulf of Alaska. But this is the entire month. Since then, we've had a lot of cooling along the West Coast. And a pattern that we've seen for almost 7 years now, the central North Atlantic is quite warm, and the area south of Greenland's cold. So what I do is I take climate indices, 1949 to present, from these 11 boxes that you see here. I put them in a statistical cluster analysis program that tries to figure out, through correlation analysis, which years have the same match of pressure patterns, the upper map, and sea surface temperature patterns, the bottom map. Now, first thing to do is read the very bottom note on the graph. What does it say? This is not a medical eye examination chart and should not be used for that purpose, okay, guys? So just let me tell you what the analog years are. They're 1989, 1990, 2008, and 2018. I didn't have enough room on the slide to tell you, but let me tell you also, do not go and look at one of those years alone and say, well, this is what I'm going to have this year. It's all of these years together, these 4 years together. It's a blend. So I get the correlations, which is what you see on the right. I've just simply highlighted in yellow those years that had correlations greater than 0.35. Well, that's not a real high correlation. You really want your correlations more like 0.6, 0.7, 0.8. But just to give you an idea, I look at all those years, try to figure out which one, based on current NOAA models, it looks like we're tracking with what the NOAA model forecast is saying. So I choose the years out of this long list, and I came up with 1989, 1990, 2008, and 2018. So we got those years. That's based on the upper level height pattern and sea surface temperature patterns in the globe. But we also kind of got to look at home and figure out what's going on here. And an interesting thing is, we don't have a lot of snow this winter in the United States. And there's a corridor of dryness all the way from Nebraska up towards Alberta. But interestingly enough, last year we had the same corridor of dryness. Except, does anyone remember what happened in the Midwest last year in February? Got colder than I'll get out, and they had so much snow, it was incredible. And then all of a sudden, you come along in the spring, and I mean, they had 2-3 feet of snow through a large area of central Nebraska up into Minnesota, all through the Dakotas, and they melted it, and they had tremendous flooding. But if you were sitting back there January 29th last year, hey, didn't look like there was going to be a problem with snow and flooding at all. But things really changed around very quickly. Now, here's a million-dollar question for you. Find out who was listening last year. What happened at the end of January that all of a sudden created this enormous jolt in the climate system? Solar flare, you got it. A-plus to that student over there. We had a great big hole open up on the sun. And these things literally part like this, and you're looking into the sun, and it just throws a tremendous amount of energy towards the planet. Now, this is not the same as a sunspot. A sunspot is basically a little eruption like a volcano throwing some energy towards us. It definitely impacts our weather and does other stuff, but it's not like a hole. We had an enormous hole develop on the sun. It threw all of this energy towards us. Well, I'm a little ahead of myself. Okay, so here we are. That's what a hole looks like. It's literally an opening, and you're looking down into the interior of the sun, and this energy just starts whizzing towards us. We know that coronal holes occur at the bottom of a slide in the sunspot number. So the graph in the bottom left-hand corner is the sunspot cycle since 2000 to present. So we had a peak there about 2003, 2004. Then we had another minimum about 2008. The next solar max was a lot less. And currently, where the blue arrow's pointing, this is where we're at the sunspot minimum right now. So it's not surprising that we had this big hole last year, because we know from historical records that these big gaps occur during solar minimums. And it's just part of the life cycle of the sun going through this high sunspot number to low sunspot number. So we have this big hole. It threw all this energy towards the planet. What happens is when energy is thrown towards the planet from the sun, it's picked up by the magnetic field. And it's pulled in to the North Pole. And so it accumulates then all of that heat energy towards the North Pole. So whenever we have one of these events, we got problems towards the North Pole. As the energy then goes towards the North Pole, it starts heating the stratosphere. So the map in the upper right-hand corner shows what happened at 70 millibars. We're talking like 80,000 feet up in the atmosphere. It suddenly warmed up. So you see a great big red area on the pole towards Greenland. It then forces the polar vortex to the sides, towards the Pacific, towards the eastern United States at 70 millibars. But below that, at 700 millibars, like a tenth of the layer of the atmosphere, at 700 millibars, below those big troughs, we have great big ridges. So what happened last year is the sun came in, gave us a big hole, a lot of energy went to the North Pole, upper graph. As soon as it did that, it forced the troughs at 70 millibars to the sides. But below the trough, notice we have a great big ridge forming in the Gulf of Alaska, which then forced that trough you see in the Pacific Northwest. And it got cold, it got snowy, and it stuck that way for about 2 months. So we really got dealt a blow from that coronal hole. That's what happened last year. Well, let's look at what's happening this year. Exactly the opposite. This year, up there at 30 millibars, which is even higher up than the 70 millibars that I showed you before, we had the evolution of a very strong high-pressure ridge in the Gulf of Alaska. The opposite of last year when we had a trough. On the other hand, notice there towards the North Pole this year, we have a very, very deep trough over the North Pole. We have no coronal hole this year. There is no energy being zoomed towards the North Pole, and therefore the North Pole has been getting colder, 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 colder. The atmosphere then is just sinking, contracts, and we end up with this great big trough. What's interesting, though, is we have this high-pressure ridge forming in the Gulf of Alaska. So we're in the exact opposite pattern of last year because we have no coronal hole. We're in a sunspot minimum anyway, so we're not getting a lot of energy towards the North Pole. So I went with this map on the left and looked at the 7 years that had that same configuration of a big ridge in the Gulf of Alaska and the trough up there on the North Pole to Greenland. And this is the composite, the central map, upper central map, is the composite of those 7 years, showing you a good relationship with a strong high in Alaska, strong trough. And notice what it does. It aims air from the North Pole straight down towards the central United States. So if you take those 7 years that had the same pattern in the stratosphere, I mean, the stratosphere is way above clouds, same pattern in the stratosphere, it ends up with a cold February, March, and April. So whatever's going on in the stratosphere right now, if we take the forecast from NOAA on the left to be correct, we go and choose those 7 years, which is the upper middle map, and then look at the temperature. It says it's going to be cold. They've had a very mild winter in the Midwest, but this thing says, hey, with this configuration in the stratosphere, it's going to change. Okay, enough for that. So the map in the upper left-hand corner is what we think the stratosphere is going to be doing. relative to the other 7 years that had the same pattern. And last year's map is the bottom left-hand corner. You couldn't ask for a map that's more opposite. Yet we still get a cold United States, but for a completely different reason. Okay, so we don't have snowfall on the ground. That's kind of to try to keep the United States warm. On the other hand, we have the stratosphere that wants to put a ridge in Alaska and a trough in Greenland. That is cold for the United States. And then this is what the analog forecast is based on surface sea surface temperatures and 700 millibar heights. It says we're going to have this tremendous ridge in the Gulf of Alaska and a trough all across Canada and a persistent ridge off the East Coast. Well, if you live in Nebraska or northern Missouri, Iowa, you're right on the dividing line. I mean, that cold wants to come down south, but at the same time, that Bermuda High wants to keep warmth going towards you. So it's going to be a pretty wild temperature swing this winter for that part of the country, because they're going to have cold coming down from Canada, but they're going to try to get warmth up from the southeast. On the other hand, that big ridge off the west coast, it is not going to be healthy for storms to get into California or even parts of Oregon. We'll get some storms dropping around from the Gulf of Alaska here into the Pacific Northwest, but the further south you get, it just isn't a wet situation. So, going into February, we got the cold coming down through the North Central Plains associated with the trough in Canada. On the other hand, the Bermuda High keeps it warm in the southeastern United States. Precip-wise, fairly dry in February from Oregon southward because of that ridge off the west coast. That Bermuda High transports a lot of moisture into the central Gulf Coast area, and look at all the moisture then through the Ohio Valley. But unlike last year, look at the Dakotas down to Nebraska, it's dry. So it's not a repeat of last year. Even though we're going to get cold come just like it did last year, it's not for the same reason. What about the spring in general? We're going to keep that high pressure ridge in the Gulf of Alaska. Bermuda High is going to persist, keep on pumping moisture into the southeastern United States, Ohio Valley. The Canadian trough kind of weakens, kind of pulls a little further north, so the cold is going to try to pull out of the United States. It's probably going to persist into at least March, so it's going to have an impact on spring weather, but not as bad as it could. So for the spring temperature forecast, map on the left, warm southwestern United States because of the ridge, lack of storms coming in. Cold March through May, but only because it's cold in the first half of the spring through the northern tier of states. Here in the Pacific Northwest, pretty normal temperatures, not a problem. Precip-wise, real dry in the southwest, no storm track into that area. We no longer have El Nino. We don't have the subtropical jet producing a lot of moisture. There is some concern there in the Pacific Northwest from the Cascades westward, slightly drier than normal. But here in the wheat area, about normal to above normal precipitation, which is what La Nina would suggest. In the plains, again, it's dry from the Canadian border south towards Nebraska. They're not going to have a repeat of last year in terms of moisture, but they are going to have problems with early planting because it's going to be too cold. Let's do a month-by-month breakdown in temperature and precipitation then. During the spring, temperatures, the set of maps on the top, precipitation, set of maps on the bottom. So let's just start with March 1st. In March, cool along the Canadian border, including you guys here in the Pacific Northwest. On the other hand, pretty normal precipitation in the Northwest. The main drought persists in the southwestern U.S. into Texas. And again, that is typical of La Nina development. The main moisture in the country is a little too far to the southeast of the winter wheat area, so the winter wheat area is still going to stay dry in March. Let's go to April. Looks like the ridge in the southwestern United States is going to become much stronger. Look at the hot temperatures developing all through California, basically saying the winter rainy season is over with for California. With a strengthening ridge in the southwestern United States, on the other hand, notice it, that ridge then pulls down some more cold air into the center part of the country. So this April forecast really does suggest they're going to have problems with early planting. They're not going to be able to get out there, plant, and hope for germination at the end of April. Also, notice how dry it is in the month of April, all the way from the southwestern United States into the central plains, including the winter wheat areas, into the central Midwest. So cold but dry. And we finally get into May. It looks like the drought is going to kind of shift more towards Texas. Hot temperatures in Texas, up towards Kansas, again, not good for their winter wheat. On the other hand, moisture may be closer to normal in the winter wheat areas. Here in the Northwest, kind of a warmish May, slightly below normal precip along the West Coast, but here in the Pacific Northwest, normal to above normal precipitation. So if I look at the spring situation here for you, yeah, you're cold in March. You start warming up in April. And definitely are warm in May. Precip-wise, almost all three of those maps for the spring are near normal, if anything, slightly above normal in the Spokane area. Okay, let's go to summer. The analog forecast indicates that we're going to have high-pressure ridges now all the way from the Pacific, eastern Gulf of Alaska, across southern Canada, and a strong ridge off of Baja California up into the Pacific Northwest. This is a warm map for the summer for the West Coast and the Northern Tier of states. The main moisture in the United States is going to come out of the Atlantic, with that ridge of high pressure from the Atlantic poking into eastern Canada. We're going to have a pretty good flow of southeast flow of good moisture all through the eastern seaboard into the Ohio Valley. And then finally down there in Mexico, Mexico's kind of caught between a ridge off of Baja and then another ridge towards Cuba. Looks like the monsoon is kind of going to have a squeeze job on it, maybe a shorter-lived monsoon, and definitely only confined to the southwestern United States. No moisture coming north with that flow pattern. Okay, so with the ridge in the west, not surprisingly, the summer forecast is warm in the western United States and dry. As I said before, there's a little moisture down there in Arizona with the summer monsoon, but it's not coming north. It's being kept further south. Interestingly enough, the central United States, pretty normal. In other words, it doesn't look like they're going to have a problem with the crop. There's no real heat in the main portion of the Corn Belt. And moisture-wise, the map on the right-hand side, moisture near normal to slightly above normal, but not flooding like last year. Those anomalies are relatively weak. Month-by-month breakdown in temperature and precipitation for the United States in the summer. Texas, after having had that real warm May, continues to have a very hot June. They're going to be in a world of hurt all through the grazing areas of the southern plains. Precipitation in June below normal from the northwest all the way down into the central Rockies. Come July, the heat retracts out of Texas, starts moving into the western United States. The main dryness stays in the western United States. But interestingly enough, as we get into August, it turns cooler and it turns wetter. So to just kind of summarize for here in the Pacific Northwest, June, about near normal temperatures, be great for finishing the wheat. Precipitation turning slightly below normal after having had pretty normal precipitation in the spring. It's going to turn dry. Again, that's probably going to be good for the wheat to finish itself. Harvest in July, warm and dry. Excellent. And then you finally get into August. The warmth and the dryness disappears, and you have a tendency towards to go cool and wet. Again, this is typical of La Nina, to see a cool, wet fall.
Whether you're concerned about Douglas's prediction for a cool, wet fall depends on whether you're a farmer who completes harvest early or one who completes harvest later. It's at times like these I'm reminded of remarks by national weather forecaster Jeremy Wolf, who I've interviewed several times on this podcast. He's of the opinion nobody can forecast weather more than 10 days out. You can hear for yourself how Douglas has forecast in past years in episodes 116, 61, and 10. That's 116, 61, and 10. All of those episodes can be downloaded from the WGC website, wagrains.org, wagrains.org. Go to the bottom of the page, click on Summaries, and navigate back into time. Thanks for listening to episode 166, or what I entitled, A Sunny Long-Range Weather Forecast for Pacific Northwest Wheat Farmers until August. About Art Douglas's long-range weather forecast given during the Farm Forum February 4th, 2020. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Weed All About It.
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun and we have our say, but Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.